UK Wine Show, show number 11. G'day, my name's Chris Scott and this is the UK Wine Show, show number 11 for the 10th of August. The UK Wine Show is brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. If you're looking to entertain some clients or get a group of friends together for some fun, give them a call. You can visit them at 3050.co.uk. That's thirtyfity.co.uk. If you want to give me a call, my name's Chris Scott and you can call me at chris.scott@ukwineshow.co.uk or visit the UK Wine Show website at ukwineshow.co.uk. This week we're starting a two-part series with Peter Ferreira from Graham Beck Wines. And honestly, it was actually supposed to be a single show, but when I went to edit it, I realised there was so much that we'd talked about in the interview that I decided that we'd split into two so we can cover it all. Peter's nickname is Bubbles, and rightly so. Matthew Jukes from the Daily Mail rated his wine one of the best sparkling wines around, including champagne. He'll be talking to us about his winery, how they started with apartheid, how the new South Africa is taking social responsibility, as well as how they use new satellite imagery to determine the health of the vines. Next week, we're going to be tasting three wines with Graham, and we'll be looking a bit beyond just those simple flavours. We'll be looking at how he made the wine and some of the problems that you encounter with South African wines, particularly the sunshine, and how he deals with that. But before we get into that, let's have the news with Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. Drinkers who live in the north of England are more likely to binge on alcohol and die younger than their southern counterparts, new research has shown. In the northeast and northwest, 23% of adults were binge drinkers, compared to less than 16% in the southeast and southwest and the east of England. The average loss of life through drinking was 10 months for men and 5 for women across England. But in Blackpool, men could take 23 months off their life and women 13 months. The greatest volume of alcohol being consumed is beer, with nearly 124 litres drunk per person in the UK. Wine consumption is far less, at nearly 28 litres per person, followed by cider at less than 13 litres and spirits at just under 3 litres. The French are finally taking on the new world with a range of simply labelled, branded wines which are based on single grape varieties rather than their locality. Called Chamard, the wines have caused consternation in France as they ignore the intrinsic wine philosophy of terroir, the belief that a wine's flavour is linked to where it's grown. The range sells between £5 and £7, the price band where New World wines have had most success, and the target is for 1.5 million in bottle sales this year. Chamard was set up by the start-up company OVS with French government backing in order to help stem the crisis in the wine industry across the Channel. Watch out for the brand hitting our supermarket shelves in the next few months. Finally, it was a launch party with a difference last week when riders on horseback stopped by for a tasting at Britain's first all-organic wine shop. Organico, which is located in Ambleside in the Lake District, offers over 150 organic wines, with the majority coming from Italy and supplied exclusively. The owner, Peter Jackson, told us that the producers were supplying them because they were a small shop and didn't want their wine ending up in supermarkets. So if you're in the Lake District this summer, head over to Ambleside and check them out. Over to you, Chris.
Cheers for that, Jane. I'm interested to see how that new French bottle looks. Now that the French have finally got around to putting the grape variety on the bottle, it'll be interesting to see what they're putting on the back label, whether there's any information about ageing, food matching, etc. I think that's one of the areas that the New World still beats France in, with the back labels. But next up, we've got Peter Ferreira, so let's have a listen to that.
Hi, I'm here with Peter Ferreira at the London International Wine Show, and Peter's been the man behind Graham Beck Wines. How are you, Peter?
I'm doing well, and you, Chris?
Yeah, great. Do you want to start off by just giving a wee bit of a history about yourself and how you got into the winemaking business?
Yeah, I normally sort of joke and said I fell into a wine tank and still learning to swim. It's been a fantastic journey. But after schooling, I did study microbiology and some economics, not direct in sort of winemaking, but obviously having the microbiology as a major subject, it sort of put the foundations to understanding how yeast will react and things like that. Then managed to get my first winemaking job in the end of 1983. I joined a small little winery in Franschhoek, close to Cape Town, and I was very fortunate that this was a specialist cellar, only producing sparkling wine in the traditional bottle fermentation. So from day one, I had a great opportunity to specialize in sparkling wine done in the traditional method.
It's the sparkling wines that you and Graham Beck have been known for. Have you been overseas and learnt much about sparkling wine from overseas, or has it been all home taught?
Chris, after my studies, obviously starting my first job, I had this really opportunity and urge to really travel the world and understand the intrinsics behind the whole process. So I've done 3 vintages in Champagne, and then I've worked in California and been to Australia on sort of learning experience. And always, you know, one likes to sort of share ideas of your own, and then obviously pick up, you know, what other guys are doing right.
When you're making your sparkling wines, is there any particular part of the process you find particularly difficult or unusual about South Africa, maybe compared to some of the other sparkling wines in the world?
I think we've got the greatest challenge, you know, and we've got the greatest opportunity in both ways. First of all, South Africa is definitely a warmer climate. I can go on, you know, most probably for the rest of the time, you know, whether hot climate or cool climate works. I think you have to understand the intrinsics of your region and adapt. And I have got a motto to say we have managed to manage the sunshine. We've got it, so we have to use it to the right thing. Nobody sort of really gave us a chance, but today I think we've established ourselves as one of the top producers of bubbly from the Cape.
Just getting back to yourself, how would you define yourself as a wine style?
I really think I have a nickname called Bubbles, and I think Bubbles is in my blood. It's the most fascinating drink, so yeah, I guess I'm a bubble, you know. I hope not a coarse one, you know. I'm always trying to be a refined bubble.
Fine, sustained bubbles.
Fine, sustained, you know, the creamy textures and all sorts of things that come from that.
Yep.
When I make sparkling wine, I sort of try and envisage myself in one of these bubbles, if you can understand. I always say I'm in search of the perfect bubble. And I sort of try and see myself inside this and see if there's any holes or sort of any peaks inside this and trying to refine it. So I guess, yeah, that's where bubbles come from.
I think we'll move on a wee bit into South Africa now and the wineries and regions that Graham Beck's been making their wines. It was in 1983 that the vineyard was set up,
yeah,
or first established. That was during the apartheid times. How does that influence you guys?
I really think Graham Beck, the owner, was definitely visionary in his sort of approach. But in 1983, you know, not much was happening for South Africa, and he bought the farm just after a very tragic flood in the area, and you know, he decided to redevelop the farm, and he just had an urge that it had to be wine grapes that he planted. So plantings happened in 85, 86 and 87, most of the plantings in Robertson, and then I joined him in 1990 with the idea of developing a cellar for sparkling wine predominantly, and it just grew from there. So our maiden vintage was only in 91 after all the planting, so the vineyards were pretty much established. And in 93, we then started putting our wares in the marketplace.
And that was about when apartheid sort of really finished in South Africa.
Yeah, as I said, you know, the vision of Graham Beck, he most probably had inside information, which is really fantastic. And it's just, we were really just ready, you know. Thank goodness, you know, things went so smooth and so fantastically that we could get back into the marketplace. And then, yeah, when we were ready with our wine, the markets opened up with New South Africa as such.
Perfect timing. So you started out in Robertson, and that's where you established your Chardonnay wines that you use in your Blanc de Blanc sparkling wines. But you've got other vineyards around the area. How did they all sort of come about?
Yeah, obviously, having Robertson established, Graham Beck is always looking out for sort of other opportunities. And an opportunity arose by buying the old historic farm Bellingham in the Franschhoek Valley and then building another cellar there in 1998. So it became a full-time operation for Graham Beck since 1998. And after that, 2 years on, we decided that looking at the portfolio of our established vineyards, that we needed to add some other vineyards closer to the ocean. Obviously, Robertson being in a continental shelf, Franschhoek being closer to the ocean, we needed something more spectacular, closer to the seaside. And we then acquired in the late 1999, beginning of 2000, we acquired 2 properties Somerset West, just on the outskirts of Stellenbosch.
Stellenbosch climate's more maritime, isn't it?
Definitely. I think this is the beauty of the operation of Grainbec, is that we have basically one owner, one beating heart as such, two sellers in two totally diverse regions, and then obviously the farms near the coastal influence. So if you can really summarize that Robertson is a continental influence, it's between two masses of mountain ranges. We have extreme hot days, wonderful cool nights, which really is, you know, a plus factor for sparkling wine. And then obviously the ones closer to the ocean, which has the maritime influence, more Mediterranean influence, where we can grow grapes that prefer cooler climate.
They'll be more like the Sauvignon Blancs.
Sauvignon Blanc for definitely, and being close to Stellenbosch, Cabernet does perfectly well. Stellenbosch is seen as the sort of capital for Cabernets. We've understood that not every variety suits every region, but we've done it in a professional way, re-looked at what the soil's potentials are and what varieties does better in these areas.
Just to summarise, you've got a continental Robertson area with a vineyard cellar that you produce predominantly your Blanc de Blancs out there.
Yeah, well, the sparkling is produced there. We have a touch of Chardonnay with a little bit of Viognier, which is a new planting. And then on the red side, the focus is on Shiraz. And then towards the maritime areas, we have our Shirazes, Cabernets and Merlots planted with a Sauvignon Blanc closer to the ocean.
Moving on a wee bit to Graham Beck himself. You said he was a miner, coal miner?
Coal miner by trade.
How the heck did he get into winemaking?
It's fascinating. He studied commerce, and his father was in the mining business, so his father said, "You're not a man if you don't work on the coalface." So he took he took that advantage to go and get his blasting certificate. So I don't know where the dynamite is stashed, he got his blasting certificate, and today he's the most successful independent coal miner in South Africa.
Graham Beck himself, his businesses are still quite family orientated, aren't they? You know, they class themselves as a family winery.
Absolutely. It's definitely a family operation, and one feels pretty much part of the family, which is fantastic. It feels like, you know, it's your own, and we have wonderful sort of ownership on this, which obviously creates a lot of respect. And if there is something that we still aspire to, is the one of the visions of Graham Beck is his responsibility towards the working class of people, and that we have a social responsibility that we'd like to sort of get through. He's still got a vision of establishing a training college. He said he's tired of investing more anything into bricks and mortar for the wine industry. The one last thing he wants to do is to do investment into its people.
Okay, there's quite a lot of social responsibility in the trade press at the moment about South African wines. It's good to see that Graham sort of helping in his own way.
Chris, it's always been. It's been a philosophy of them since we joined them.
One of the things that you guys have been known for in South Africa is trying out weird and wonderful scientific things. You've been taking satellite imagery. How do you use that in your vineyard, and what exactly are you doing these satellite photos?
Because one thing, you know, we definitely have learned as winemakers that to look after the fruit is to also understand where it's growing. And a lot of our sort of picking actions is based on tasting grapes in the vineyards. But we always sort of had an idea, maybe, that we were doing things in the right way, but we had no evidence. And since the last 3 years, we ventured into understanding and using the what we call the GIS. It's a geographic information system that is available there that gives one imagery to look into it.
So what is it? It's satellites looking over the Earth, taking photos.
Yeah.
They're those NASA satellites, aren't
they? It's the NASA satellites, which gives you a Landsat, which is a three-dimensional image, topography. And then what happens is this, with the satellite, I think every 7 days it passes over the same area. It will then take pictures, and this picture is taken in near-infrared. It sounds all completely confusing, but it just gives you a deeper spectrum of colors. And we drape this picture over the Landsat, and then we can analyze where we have what we call hot spots and cool spots. Cool spots is necessary where a vineyard is on holiday. It's just growing too vigorous. It's forgetting that it has to produce fruit. and sort of the hot spots is where the vine is either under stress or not getting sufficient water.
That gives you an opportunity to understand what's going on in your vineyard at a reasonable level now. Are you using that for any planting programs or anything like that?
It's become absolutely crucial to use this not only while the vine is in the ground, is actually to do it beforehand. So as you mentioned now, in terms of the soil preparations, this is absolutely a vital opportunity. Because not only do we use the colors to tell you whether the vine is happy or not, it gives you different sort of pages that you can flick over this the image in terms of aspects. So aspects will give you the gradient, whether it's the right slope, whether it's east-facing, south-facing, west-facing, so you can understand that certain varieties need more sunshine, some needs less. In other ways, you can have a convex-concave relief as a picture over this, and this will tell you where water is going to lie. So it will help not only in the irrigation, in drainage.
So when you say concave, it's got a hollow bit that the water tends to pool in.
Yeah, and it's your valley floors. Yeah. We're trying to stay away from valley floors because, you know, that's for the guys who want to have too much holiday. You know, they don't really want to work the slopes where, you know, obviously the investment's a little bit more.
Is that where a lot of your grapes are on, in the slopes?
Definitely we've moved to the slopes. We also have an understanding that you need about a 6-degree slope for very good runoff, so you don't have these waterlogged conditions. Yeah. So it's moving away from valley floors.
Okay, so 6 degrees, not too bad. You don't have any real problems with tractors getting up them. It's not like crazy German growers in the Rhine or
anything. No, we're still very fortunate that the sort of arable lands and where we can get water to is not on the extreme high slopes. So slopes in the Western Cape on average will be, well, the good ones will start at 6 and must probably go up to about 14 degrees.
Okay, so still quite easy to get up and down. All right, thank you very much, Peter. It's been great talking to you.
That's fantastic. Thank you.
I found that very interesting. Peter's a nice guy. Sorry a bit about the sound quality towards the end. It was recorded at the International Wine Show a couple of months ago, and it was very noisy where we were. Next week, we're going to be talking to Peter about some of the wines and how he makes the wines, some of the problems that you encounter in South Africa when you're actually making wine. Until then, cheers and good drinking.